Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole. Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean? I don't know how long you guys got, but I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
Mickey Mohammed.
We got Pootie Tang in the house tonight.
What is slashing?
Slashing is, like death, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, there's a penalty for that?
Yeah. And for a trip also, you know?
Oh.
Like that. And
mm-hmm.
for hook, like this.
Mm-hmm.
And for spear, you know? Like that.
Mm-hmm.
All bad.
Bad.
You do that, you go to the box, you know? 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get free.
Pull my pants out a little bit and show them the Hockey Night logo.
Stupid. Such a cover. Fine line between stupid and clever.
We're men, okay? That means a few things. We like to shit with the door open. We talk about pussy. We go on riverboat gambling trips. We make our own beef jerky. That's what we do.
All right, Chris Block here, the Third Man in Radio, here on this Thursday, July 15th, 2010. It is 4:32 here in Chicago. And alongside, on this very special occasion, it's been a while. I can't even remember the last time you were on this show.
You know what? It has been a while. Let's put it this way. I don't think the Blackhawks were crowned Stanley Cup champions since my last show.
Impossible, because the first show that I did since the Blackhawks became Stanley Cup champions was, in fact, yesterday.
See? Precisely.
I'm glad that you're keeping up with the show that you're not on, but it is your show.
No, it's definitely not my show. And, Black, you know, I noticed something in that open that I don't know if I picked up on. But what is it? There's a fine line between creativity and stupidity. And I think that pretty much sums our show up pretty well. We walk that line really well.
I know. I would later on, I would love to discuss this show and what it is that we do on this show.
You sound like a gay.
Yeah. But that is the superstar, formal introduction. And it is a big day today. I don't know how many people know this. In fact, I'm sure nobody does. But today, in fact, this day in Blackhawk history, 1 year ago today, July 15, 2009, the Blackhawks fired Dale Talon, general manager. Officially, they moved him to relocated his office. But really what it was a firing. Dale Talon didn't spend much time at all around the Blackhawks after that, and he left the organization without really, no one said anything about it, but he was gone halfway through the season last year entirely. But that happened on July 15, 2009. Something else happened that day, superstar.
I know.
It was the first official show of this thing here, the Third Man in Radio.
Pretty exciting. 1 year.
In fact, I was thinking about this the other day. Actually yesterday. It seems as though that every time that we do a show, something major happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know you remember, and I remember, and people probably don't remember. we weren't supposed to go on that Thursday, a year ago from today. That was not the original intentions for the original launch. But with the aforementioned firing of Dale Talon, you made the command decision to move the inaugural show up.
Yeah, basically what had happened when we decided that we were going to do this show, and finally, after probably a year and a half, 2 years of me procrastinating, which is a common theme in my life. Basically, what we did was we did a practice show, over on TalkShoe, which is the facilities that Hockey Night uses. And if you've ever met the guys from Hockey Night, you wouldn't want to occupy the same facilities as they do. So we quickly moved out of there. But, you know, we came over here to Blog Talk because the one thing that I saw on Blog Talk was that we could take live calls on the air. And we could do so much more than you can at TalkShoe. You know, I don't want to rip anybody else's product. But, you know, we were capable of doing more here at Blog Talk. So we came over here to Blog Talk, and, I don't remember exactly what day that we were supposed to do it, but, Dale Talon gets fired, and I'm like, hey, we got to go. We got to do this. Talk about it today. But, yeah, it's been a crazy year for us. We're trying to figure this thing out, and I don't know. I hope people have enjoyed it. I know people enjoyed it because I didn't do a show for a month, and everybody's flipping out in my email box. So it doesn't feel like a complete waste of time, Superstar.
Hey, well, as long as the people enjoy it, that's all that matters. And, I think overall we've gotten better as the year went on, obviously with some glitches, or it depends on how much alcohol was consumed by either one of us, me, at any given point. But overall, I think it's a much better product today than it was a year ago.
I hope so. We're going to talk more about the Third Man Inn a little bit later on. We got a lot to talk about here on the show today. Of course, yesterday, for those people that are following along with the show, and yesterday's show was a big hit. I think hockey fans in general, the Stanley Cup Finals come and go, then the draft, and July 1st and 2nd, and free agency come and go, and then everybody kind of has had enough at that point. And then 2 weeks later, everyone's like, well, when does hockey start? And it seems like people are at that stage right now. And a lot of people listened to yesterday's show already. So, but we talked a lot about a ton of stuff, Dieter Kurtenbach and I. But we didn't get to some things, and I want to touch on those today. Most notably, the passing of former Blackhawk at Detroit Red Wing enforcer Bob Probert. I want to talk about that today. And also prospect camp a little bit more. And some other things on Blackhawks news today made a little bit of news. First of all, very cool guy, Steve Smith, who was a Blackhawk, was also an Edmonton Oiler. He left the organization today. He was a pro scout with the Blackhawks, and today he stepped down from that position to go back to Edmonton, where he will be behind the bench as an assistant coach for the Edmonton Oilers. So, Steve Smith, I shared a plane flight with Steve Smith to Vegas one time, and he's a good guy.
Always seemed like a good guy. Never met him. Always seemed like a good guy.
He was swinging in Blackhawk history, swung the biggest stick, if you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. I did not know that.
Yeah, he's got the heaviest lumber in Blackhawks history.
I will take your word for it.
Igor Makarov, Russian prospect, drafted a few years back. Never has come to America. Well, now apparently he is coming to America. He's leaving his mother, Russia, to try to apply his trade here in North America. Signs a contract with the Blackhawks apparently yesterday. He'll be heading to Rockford. Igor Makarov is an interesting thing. I saw him a couple of years ago at Prospect Camp, and he did some things that, you know, get you excited. So, of course, the people, you know, the fans that were there saw him, started spreading the word that he was an up-and-coming future star with the Blackhawks, and I don't know. He hasn't gotten any playing time in Russia. His, you know, the most crucial year, I mean, the kid's going to be 23. The most crucial years of his development have come and gone, and you know, those have passed him by now. It's going to be interesting to see where he's at when he gets to the Rockford IceHogs this year. He'll be in Blackhawks camp, presumably, now that he signed this contract. But I mean, maybe he could make the team. I don't know. I think him playing a good part of the year in Rockford and getting used to the North American game, you know, it may be a pro league, the KHL over in Russia, which is what he played in for SKA St. Petersburg. Then he got traded to Moscow Dynamo, which was it Moscow Dynamo? Let me check my deal here, superstar. Yeah, Moscow Dynamo. Yeah, I'm doing that live on the air. I'm going to check my deal. Moscow Dynamo, which is now a defunct team. What were you going
to
say?
That was the team that used to come over and do the exhibition games with the NHL teams in the late 80s, early 90s, correct?
Right. Yep. I was at one of those games at Chicago Stadium. That was back when there was a lot of animosity going on between the Americans and the Russians. Politically, not just through hockey. It's interesting that you can never, you know, that's one of the reasons why the Olympics don't mean anything anymore. It's like Americans don't hate anybody.
Everyone hates
us. Yeah, a lot of people hate Americans, but Americans don't have a reason to dislike anybody. You know, I mean, unless in Afghanistan, like, you know, puts teams in the Olympics. You know, who are you going to really hate?
Yeah, I can't think of anybody.
Yeah. It's a flashback to a different time. Thanks, superstar. But yeah, I don't know. We could talk more about him later. Jack Skilly. 1 year contract today. Of course, he was a restricted free agent, the Blackhawks. He was one of the guys that the Blackhawks tendered a qualifying offer for. He didn't accept his qualifying offer, understanding that if he were to accept his qualifying offer, it would have put him right around $1 million in money that would count against the cap while he was here with the Blackhawks. I got two things to say about, let me start with this. 1 year contract, $600,000, as reported today by Adam Johns of the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, apparently, somebody stole Adam Johns, and I don't need to know anybody's name, you know. I mean, it's, you could probably figure out, you know, the puke that did it. He's a common thief of hockey bloggers and people who make a living, maybe producing a publication here in town. But, yeah, someone stole Adam Johns' report today and didn't – you know, that's the thing. If you're going to be – like, if you're someone who's going to be on the Internet and, you know, do something like the Third Man In or the Fifth Feather or Hockey Night or whatever, you know, if you're going to do that and you don't have, like, the simplest understanding of professional journalism, get the fuck off the Internet because you're a fucking joke. You're embarrassing. Fucking puke. I'm done. I don't know. Okay. So Jack Skilly, 1 year, $600,000, and it's interesting that, you know, Jack Skilly has always been a guy, right, that I don't think he completely understands why he hasn't made it to the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, yes, part of him not sticking here specifically this last year was because of his downside guarantee was $850,000. Plus, he had bonuses that he could reach. But we're talking about Jack Skilly. You know, we're not talking about Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane. It's Jack frickin' Skilly. You know, you know, but Jack Skilly had, you know, there was a chance, I guess, that Jack Skilly could catch fire and, you know, reach his bonuses. But, you know, that's not the reason why he wasn't on the Blackhawks. The reason why Jack Skilly hasn't played on the Blackhawks for any given length of time yet is because Jack Skilly sucks. He's not, you know, he's a fine AHL player. And there's a lot of guys that make decent livings and live the dream, and they don't grow old until they turn 39, 40, because they're really good at hockey at the AHL level. That could be Jack Skilly's life. And there's nothing wrong with it. Ride the buses, you know, commercial flights, signing autographs, playing hockey in front of 3,000 people on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. You know, I mean, there's a lot worse things to do with your life. That could be Jack Skilly's life. But he, whenever he's played here, he hasn't played well enough to earn a spot. And I see this contract, and I'm thinking to myself, I could just look at Jack Skilly, and now Jack Skilly has, like, this idea that, okay, now I'll make the team because I, you know, my it's $600,000 guaranteed money. That's really good money. So he's going to make a good living, and then he's going to think because it's only a little bit above the minimum that there's no reason now for the Blackhawks not to have him on the opening night roster. I mean, to me, it's just another stage in the failure that is Jack Skilly. Like, how many ways and how many opportunities can you give a guy and have him fail? And here's another one. And I'll be the first to admit, a lot of my anger towards the Jack Skilly experiment is because when they drafted him out of Wisconsin, which is another thing entirely, Wisconsin is you can't – it goes against my whole theory in life that anything that happens in Wisconsin is wrong and should be taken back. Like, you got Wisconsin Badgers. I mean, don't ever, like, count on – I mean, where's Kyle Turris been since he got drafted?
No idea.
Okay. You know, I mean, what is Wisconsin given us, really? In all these years, what can we thank Wisconsin for besides cheese?
Adam Burrish.
Yeah. So when I saw the Blackhawks draft Jack Skilly, and I had watched him play at Wisconsin, I got excited. I was like, you know, he's got to fill out, but he, you know, I was excited about that pick, and I was behind Jack Skilly. I was anticipating him coming up and being a part of the, you know, the infamous core of the Blackhawks that's going to, you know, lead you through the decade, right? You know, stupid me. I should have trusted my instincts. My instincts said Wisconsin, bad. Badgers, suck. Don't ever go there. College hockey, they do terrific. Pros, No. Don't go there. But I didn't trust my instincts. I gave the guy the benefit of the doubt, and that was my fault.
And that being said, I leave for Wisconsin tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm not going with you. All right. So, yeah, everybody get ready for the Jack Skilly experience. It should be so much fun. More people leaving the organization. Danny Richmond. You know, at one time, Danny Richmond was thought, this is like the absurdity of you know, prospect, you know, like when people, like, determine which prospects are going to, you know, end up where and, you know, who's going to be good and who's not. Like, you can imagine at some point, like, really smart people sat around a table in a conference room and said, you know what, this Danny Richmond's really got something.
Yeah. No.
Danny Richmond's going to the Toronto Maple Leafs / Marlies on a two-way deal, 1 year. He actually is going to get a pretty substantial raise because Danny Richmond only plays AHL hockey. He doesn't play NHL hockey. So $105,000 he made in the AHL last year. He's going to make $200,000 this coming season. So good for Danny Richmond.
It's a nice size raise for him. Yeah, congratulations then.
I will say this, with the with Danny Richmond being gone and Colin Frazier being gone and Adam Burris won't fight anybody. That's, you know, because whatever. But the Blackhawks now are seriously lacking in a part of Blackhawk lore that is much desired by Blackhawk fans, and that's little geeks who are willing to go out and get their ass pounded every night. Danny Richmond would love to drop the gloves and get his head pummeled by anybody willing to drop the gloves with him. Colin Frazier gets his head bashed in on a nightly basis every night he drops the gloves. The Blackhawks, who do the Blackhawks have that's like a little geek who's willing to go out and get his head smashed in every night?
I can't think of anybody.
It's going to have to be Jake Dowell.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll do it.
Nick Boynton's song team?
Nah, not as of yet. We talked about this yesterday. Nick Boynton, I guess the decision is down to either he re-signs with the Blackhawks or he retires. 31-year-old Nick Boynton. Interesting. I don't know. I could, you know. The problem with Nick Boynton is, like, you've got this big, dope John Scott on the team now. You know, 6'8", 260 pounds, can't really skate, can't really do anything. You know, so the Blackhawks signed him. And, you know, so he's like your seventh defenseman. And, you know, some nights he'll dress and play on the fourth line and get three or four shifts. I mean, welcome back David Krejci is really what we're saying. Like, for those of you that were really upset that David Krejci left the, you know, isn't with the Blackhawks anymore, you got John Scott. But he'll drop the gloves, and he may not get his butt kicked, but, you know, he's a big dope, not a little geek. Need more little geeks. What else happened? Oh! I don't think you'll be interested in this at all, Superstar, but the Chicago White Sox today announced their promotional night for fans attending or wanting to attend the Friday, August 27th game against the New York Yankees, 7:10 at U.S. Cellular Field. Do you have any idea what that is, Superstar?
I have no idea, and you're right. I have no care in the world as far as that goes.
It will be Blackhawks night. Now, get this,
yeah.
Right? They've done this before. They've done this the last two seasons, you know, prior. But it's been, forgive me if I'm wrong, but it's been weeknights. I was at one of them. It was a couple years ago. I think it was the first one when we were there and, like, you know, there were people there that knew what was going on. I was at one that was at Wrigley Field. I think the Cubs were playing the Astros. I was just by chance I went to the game. I think by the day of I knew that it was it was Blackhawks night at Wrigley Field. You know, and these promotional nights were like 2 weeks apart, I think. And at the Cubs game, and again, this is 2 years ago, but at the Cubs game, absolutely nobody knew that it was Blackhawks night, and no, even less people cared that it was Blackhawks night at Wrigley Field. And then 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks later, later or before, doesn't matter, who cares. There was actually a good amount of people at U.S. Cellular Field with Blackhawks stuff on, and you know, you could tell that there was people there that were kind of into it. So I guess that tells you that, well, probably not now, but 2 years ago or however long it was, more Blackhawks fans or a bigger percentage of Blackhawks fans were also White Sox fans. I doubt you could say that today.
No, there's no way in hell you can say that now. Just by sheer numbers.
No. But yeah, but you know, here's the thing, and you know, if I was the Blackhawks, I wouldn't be happy about this. But the theme of the night is not just Blackhawks night, and the players are gonna, I don't know about all the players, but I guess most of the players will be there, and the Stanley Cup will be there. The New York Yankees won the World Series last year, right?
Yes, they did.
Okay, so that's kind of cool. You got the defending World Series champions and the Stanley Cup champions in the same building on the same night.
That is pretty cool.
But then you get the White Sox.
Yeah, can we have the Yankees play the Lakers?
What's out of place here? But no, the other thing about this night, and I wouldn't be happy about the Blackhawks, or if I was a Blackhawks, because to me it's like making fun of players and hockey fans in general, because you have Patrick Kane to thank for this, but it's basically being branded Mullet Night, and the entire night will be accompanied by, and I don't know what this means, but it'll be accompanied by mullet-style music.
Mullet-style music, huh?
Now, what do you think that is?
I'd probably say some mid-80s hair bands.
It could be U2, like the Joshua Tree.
Yeah, you know,
didn't all four men, well, probably three members of U2 have mullets back in the day?
Two for sure. I don't know if
Bono and the Edge did, right?
Right. I don't know if the bass player ever had hair. So he might be the one exception to that rule.
All right. I'm thinking like maybe it'd be cool if you went to the Cell and they started breaking out like the Slaughter and Danger Danger. What's his name? George Lynch.
George Lynch, nice.
Yeah, the Damn Yankees. There, that's good, right?
New York yeah, Yankees, you're
Damn you're, Yankees.
Damn Yankees.
Get a little Ted Nugent action there, you know.
There we go.
That would be cool. Tora Tora.
Definitely mullet-haired music.
Yeah. We should send in our suggestions. All right. That should be interesting. Who fuck cares? Pierre LeBrun today. Now, there's been rumors going around, you know, because everybody loves to start a rumor. And sometimes how these rumors get started, because, listening is a skill that not a lot of people have, and also reading and comprehension is a skill that almost no one on the internet, has attained. Because sometimes people will throw out scenarios, writers, bloggers will, say, hey, what if, this may work, when you're talking about the Blackhawks and how they're going to, roster a team this coming season. They'll say, well, they could get this guy, and if they put this guy with this guy, then all of a sudden it becomes a rumor that the Blackhawks are courting such players,
Right.
Right. That's usually how these things happen. Well, I don't know if you've heard the quote-unquote rumor that the Blackhawks may have interest in Mike Modano, who doesn't want to retire now.
I have not heard that rumor.
Well, Mike Modano's buddy at ESPN and Hockey Night in Canada, Pierre LeBrun, today shot down those rumors. Mike Modano via text on Pierre LeBrun's BlackBerry, telling LeBrun that he nor his agent have ever talked to the Hawks about something like that, in quotes, at all. So up to this point, or when Mike Modano sent that text, according to Mike Modano, that there was either no interest or discussions had not taken place at all. Of course it doesn't mean that they may not ever happen. But as of right now, the Blackhawks have absolutely zero interest in Mike Modano. The front runners, it would appear, are the Detroit Red Wings, which he has talked to. We can confirm that. There's been some rumbling. I don't know if these are officially confirmed or not, but I heard some rumblings through people that actually have sources and don't have to steal other people's work on the internet, that there was interest. I don't know how much interest, but I guess minimal enough interest in the Minnesota Wild, which would be kind of cool, Modano going back to Minnesota.
That's the rumor that I heard.
Yeah. And then also both teams in Southern California. Not that there are any official rumors or anything like that, but if you're looking for other teams that may be interested and it could work out, those would be the teams. But, yeah, so no Mike Modano in a Blackhawks uniform, and I can't say that I'm disappointed. Like Mike Modano, but I don't know. So what else is going on, Superstar? Anything on your end over there?
No, not really. You know what, Black? I did read something, and I don't remember where, who wrote it, and I wish I could. And this is going to the Nicholas Jalmerson, you know, the offer sheet from the San Jose Sharks. And people, the article was stating that the real reason why Doug Wilson offered Nicholas Jalmerson the offer sheet wasn't necessarily to get Nicholas Jalmerson. It was to get Antti Niemi. Now, if they ended up with Nicholas Jalmerson, they wouldn't have been overly disappointed with the retirement of Rod Blake, but the overall that Doug Wilson had was to get Antti Niemi, knowing if the Blackhawks match, they're going to have a hard time matching and coming up with the money to keep Niemi.
I'm sorry. So what are you saying now?
Thoughts? I mean, is it that something you heard? Can you need to repeat it, Block?
I'm sorry. I was reading an email. No, you were saying that it wasn't necessarily to get Hjalmarsson. It was to finish?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily to get Hjalmarsson. It was in the Hawks match. The Sharks now know it's almost impossible for the Hawks to keep Antti Niemi, who is really who Doug Wilson wanted.
That's interesting because, yes, I did talk about that on yesterday's show. I mean, no one has told me that, and I haven't read that. But just looking at it, I mean, what I said yesterday when talking with Dieter on the show is that you have basically a situation right now where, okay, Doug Wilson's under a lot of pressure to get his team at least back to where they were, give them a fighting chance to get to the Stanley Cup final again. They finally overcame the first round and the early knockout blues. They made it to the conference finals. They got swept by the Blackhawks. He's got to get back there, right? Well, he's letting Nabokov walk. No one else in the NHL is willing to touch Nabokov at the rate that he wants. So he goes off to Russia. Now Doug Wilson's sitting there with a situation where the two goaltenders that he has under contract that are going to play for him in the NHL this year are Antero Ninomaki and Thomas Greiss. Well, that doesn't sound too good on the surface, right?
No, not at all.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that his objectives were twofold. He's got some holes on that defense to fill, and by sending that offer sheet and Nicholas Hjalmarsson signing it and putting the Blackhawks in the bind that he's put him in, it basically put him in, Doug Wilson in a situation where, listen, he's either going to get Nicholas Hjalmarsson or the Blackhawks match, and now they're in a situation where to keep Niemi, they're going to have to trade another player, which is just the fact of the matter. They're going to have to trade another big contract because I know that everyone just wants to say, oh, trade Marty Reese or trade Thomas Kopechke. Well, that doesn't get you enough cap space because these are guys that are making $1.2 million, a little under $1.2 million a year, and you're going to replace. You have to replace the player. You have to replace that slot, and that's a slot that's already accounted for, and you're already trying to fill six empty slots on the roster, and you have no money. And that's the other thing that I keep trying to reiterate, is that everybody's got Cristobal Huey off the team, and he will in some way, shape, or form, and through some avenue, he will be playing elsewhere next year. He won't be playing on the Blackhawks until or unless, of course, fingers crossed, knock on wood, it doesn't happen, but until a $6.5 million player, per se, gets knocked out for the season. There's no room for him. You know, you just, under no circumstances can you fit that contract onto the Blackhawks. So he will be playing somewhere else, but you can't send his contract to Rockford until October. During the offseason, during the summer, teams have a cushion in which they can go 10% over the cap. Well, before the Skilly contract, the Blackhawks had about $4.2 million more to spend before they reached that 10%. And that, of course, that's with Huey under contract. And, you know, sitting there because he's only got a one-way deal, and he finished the season with the Blackhawks. So he counts. So let's just say Niemi, you know, he skips arbitration, and the Blackhawks give him a one-year deal for $3 million. Of course, if that's what they're offering, Niemi's just going to go to arbitration because he's thinking that he can get more, something more like Halak got. Or I would expect that Niemi's going to get at least $3 million in arbitration. So if the Blackhawks are only willing to give him 1 year at $3 million and then said, we'll talk again next summer when we hopefully have more money to spend and we can give you a longer deal, of course the Blackhawks wouldn't want to do that. They'd want to, you know, they'd want to extend it a bit because Niemi will be an unrestricted free agent after next season. But just let's just say, fantasy world, you lock down Niemi for $3 million. Well, that leaves you with $1.2 million during the summer, of course. But that leaves you with $1.2 million to sign four or five other players. It ain't going to happen. Somebody else has to be dealt. And it's got to be a decent-sized contract because you don't have anything else to play with. So I think that, in Doug Wilson's mind, he sat there and he brainstormed it and said, well, number one, either I get Halmerson, or in his mind, I think best-case scenario is the Blackhawks, you know, just know that they're not going to be able to sign Niemi. I think in the back of their minds, they feel like Niemi is subject, you know, is kind of a case that probably would walk in unrestricted free agency just because if he has another decent season, he's going to want the world. And the Blackhawks just aren't, not this year, not next year, not the year after. They're not going to be able to give anybody else the world. They've given the world to everybody they have already. You know, they just don't, the Blackhawks cannot carry a $5 million goaltender. So if the Blackhawks are sitting there today and say, well, we got to get something for Niemi. That's something we talked about yesterday. Under no circumstances will the Blackhawks go to arbitration and say, you know what, they awarded him too much money, we can't afford it, and walk away from that deal. I know that that's an option that they have, but they can't do it. They can't walk back to their fans, especially the dumb ones, that just, oh, Antti Niemi won a Stanley Cup, he's the best goalie in the world. You can't go to your fan base and say, well, we can't afford 3.75 for a goalie. We let him go. We didn't get anything for him, and we went out and signed Jose Theodore for $2 million, you know, a year for a year or two. But we still had to trade Dave Boland. Under no circumstances will they allow that to happen. They will do something before arbitration if they get wet feet. They will absolutely do it. Whether it's trading Boland, Sharp. You know, if Kovalchuk doesn't, you know, if he flakes out on L.A. and L.A. is insistent on getting someone like a Kovalchuk, if that's what they feel they're missing from being next year's version of the Blackhawks, maybe, you know, I don't see the Blackhawks trading Marian Hossa to someone that they feel is a contender. But Marian Hossa is someone that the Kings were very, very interested in last summer. I know no one likes to hear it, but you hired Marian Hossa to help you win a Stanley Cup. Now you got the Stanley Cup, and you're looking at that 12-year contract. It's got 11 years left. He's making 7.9 this year. Yeah, it's five and a quarter against your cap. That's a lot of money these days against your cap, especially the situation the Blackhawks are in. Blackhawks got to get rid of another one of these big contracts. It's not going to make anybody happy. Fans are going to cry about it, but that's the situation they're in because that's the situation that Doug Wilson – with a lot of help from Nicholas Jalmerson, put him in. So, yeah, he was either getting Jalmerson or he was weakening the Blackhawks further. At the very least, best-case scenario in his mind is he could work out a trade for Niemi or the Blackhawks walk away from arbitration, which, in my opinion, they would never do. Again, it's a one-year deal. He's not getting a $5 million or a $4 million reward. It'll be somewhere between three and Halak's number. And it's a one-year deal. So you can work around that. You know, because the only other option is to walk away and, like I said, get a Turco, get a Teodor, but you still got to trade somebody else to make it all work under the cap. So it doesn't make any sense. You keep Niemi and you trade somebody else. But, you know, they would want to lock him up long-term, and I think the problem that they're going to have with Niemi is that Niemi, right, and rightfully so, no one should begrudge these players for wanting as much money as they, you know, as they can get. I think the problem in the situation that Jalmerson's put him in now is that, gosh, I don't know that players care too much, but if this leads to, you know, a player that wasn't expected to have to be dealt, like a Sharp being dealt, I mean, can you imagine Jalmerson walking into that locker room on the first day of training camp? You know, because everybody knows that, you know, he was the one that put the Hawks in that situation. So as good as he is, you know, he cost the Blackhawks another player. But we don't know. I mean, we don't know what those contract negotiations between he and the Hawks were. All we know is that Stan Bowman dismissed any idea of an offer sheet. Oops.
Oops.
Hasn't been a good summer for Stan Bowman.
No, not at all. Well, you know, and I was mentioned it to somebody the other day, it's kind of a vicious cycle. It's been, and what I mean by that is the old man dies, Rocky comes in and says, John, make us relevant again. Well, you become relevant by paying big money for the best free agents to win a Stanley Cup. Well, guess what? After you win that Stanley Cup, people need raises. And you almost start that whole vicious cycle all over again. Now, you got your cup, but you're looking at some lean years, and then you're going to have to, I think you're not necessarily having to become relevant after that, because winning a Stanley Cup takes care of that, but people have to understand that there's a lot of changeover and turnover because of the situation that they were in 3-4 years ago to the situation they're in now. If that makes any sense to you at all, let me know.
Well, I mean, they won the Stanley Cup.
Right.
You know.
But my point is, the byproduct of winning the Stanley Cup, people need to get paid.
Right. You know, of course. I mean, that's with everything. You know, the Blackhawks went... They went all in, right? You know, they put it all on red. And it was either going to pay off huge or they were going to you know, swing and miss, and they'd still have to do what they're doing now. I mean, I don't think that the fact that they won the cup, you know, if they would have lost in the finals or if they would have lost in the conference finals to San Jose, I still think you see the offer sheet to Jalmerson. The only difference is Niemi doesn't win a cup, so, you know, perhaps you're looking at this arbitration hearing differently, and he and his agent are as well. But the fact is, he did win the cup, and, you know, he's arbitration eligible. So, you know, they're not gonna take some lowball offer from the Blackhawks when they know they can go. He is in the, you know, the greatest position ever for a player, you know, that's 26 and heading to arbitration. He just won a Stanley Cup, you know, and He's got 1 year left till unrestricted free agency. He can't lose. And there's no reason for him to take a low ball offer for, you know, to bypass his 27-year-old unrestricted free agency. You know, why would he sign a two or three year deal at this point when, you know, he's going to play? I mean, for all the changes that the Blackhawks have made, and I mentioned this yesterday, the most, to this point anyway, the biggest impact player that they lost was Dustin Byfuglien. When you're talking about a game changer, Dustin Byfuglien in the playoffs and when he wants to be is a game changer. He's 6'4", 260 pounds, not in the greatest of shape, but he is a 6'4", 260 pounds. He can skate. He skates very well. He can play forward. He can play defense. You know, and then that's interesting. Rick Dudley was saying that he likes Byfuglien better on defense than he does at forward, but they're going to play him at forward in Atlanta. But, you know, I mean, that's the biggest thing that you've lost. And everything else that you've lost are all third and fourth liners. In an aging defenseman who you got the absolute most you could out of him in the second of his three-year deal, and odds are that if he had to go through another season like he just did, that he would break down. It's the law of averages. You know, an NHL defenseman who plays the way Brent Sopel does, forget about the money he makes. He was probably going to break down. Odds are he's going to break down this next season. So, you know, you move him out. I mean, that's a smart decision that a general manager that wants to win Stanley Cups every year makes. Forget about what Brent Sopel makes. You had a great year, but you got the best that you could possibly ask out of Brent Sopel, so you move him along. Andrew Ladd is a guy that Stanley Cup championship teams lose. He just is. You know, you're up against the cap. Love Andrew Ladd, but, you know, you could live without Andrew Ladd. You could live without Colin Frazier and Adam Birch. You know, Adam Birch not being on the team makes you a better team. You know, I mean, they haven't, I mean, what have they lost? They haven't really lost that much, except for Byfuglien. So they're going to be a great team again. And Antti Niemi's going to be in the net for another great team, which stands the reason that with that defense clearing out all those pucks and, you know, cutting down on the high percentage opportunities, he's going to have another very good year. And whether it's Corey Crawford, whether it's a cheap veteran that comes in and backs him up as a little insurance, or whether, like you said before, tragedy, you know, strikes the leg of a very expensive player, and that player goes down for the year, you take the injury exemption, and Cristobal Huey's back up here. You know, I mean, he should. I imagine Niemi's going to play 60 games, play very, very well, and then become an unrestricted free agent, and some team is going to give him an insane contract. So why would Niemi want a long-term deal at this point? He just doesn't. It puts the Blackhawks in an unenviable situation where they've got a goalie that doesn't want to sign a long-term deal. You can't even give him a crazy... Not that you would give a goaltender. Goaltenders are the last position that you would ever want to give a crazy 10-year contract to. And Niemi's not even old enough to give him one of those contracts that are ridiculous on the back end in their retirement years, because he's only 26. He's not old enough to give one of those contracts to. And you don't give 15-year contracts to goaltenders unless you're Mike Milbury. So,
well, I think you hit it on the head, not to interrupt you, that they lost a lot in sheer number of players. What's it, 7, 8 now? But all those guys are I don't want to call them fringe players, but they're all very replaceable.
Well, you know who replaces Andrew Ladd is Troy Brouwer.
Right.
Okay. Who's replacing Troy Brouwer? Either Kyle Beach or Jack Skilly. Okay. You know, is that as good as having Andrew Ladd and Troy Brower? No. But the Blackhawks were stacked. I mean, they had crazy depth last year, and that's why they won a Stanley Cup. No team could skate with them for 60 minutes of every game of a seven-game series. That's why at no point in the playoffs we sat here and talked about it. At times I wrote about it.
Really?
At no point did we ever say, like, have any doubt that the Blackhawks were going to win a Stanley Cup. I think we had a serious doubt. But I guess for me, I mean, I had doubts that they were going to be able to get out of rounds, you know,
what?
Quick enough. No, I never thought they were going to lose to Nashville. But, you know, you lose Sopel. I think Sopel is probably the biggest, outside of Bufflin, is the biggest thing, because you're going to have the hardest time replacing that position. Because, the way it is today, your top four is set, of course. Everybody knows it. Keith Seabrook, Jalmerson, and Campbell. Now, you can't have an inexperienced 5-6. You have to have some poise on your third unit, otherwise you're going to wear out Keith and Seabrook, and they'll get injured. So you have to have something on that third unit. You're not going to see Hendry and Lalonde. You're not going to see Vishnevsky and Lalonde, because it doesn't make any sense. Those guys can't be trusted in a lot of situations. The great thing about Brent Sopel is that he could eat up a lot of penalty-killing minutes. And Lalonde's not going to eat up penalty-killing minutes. Vishnevsky's not. Hendry's probably not. That's one position that they're definitely going to have to go outside of the organization. It's got to be somebody who's cheap, maybe a veteran that's desperate in late August, or is willing to come in on a tryout and win a job, like Brent Sopel did. Well, he was with Detroit, but the Hawks plucked him out of Detroit camp when he was there on a tryout. That's how he came to the Hawks. But, you know, I think that's the Blackhawks' biggest concern at this point. It's the depth on the defense. I talked about it yesterday. You know, seeing prospect camp, I thought that the player that has the most, has the best ability and the best chance of making the team out of camp. I think everybody expects Beach to. I want to talk about Beach in a second. But Lalonde is the guy that actually could make it. He has to have a great camp, and I think he needs a year in Rockford. To be able to play at the level that the Blackhawks play at, you know, I'm sure Lalonde could probably make some NHL team, but the Blackhawks, and this is something that Blackhawks fans have to get in their head, the Blackhawks are no longer just any NHL team. They're the Chicago. You got to think in terms of they're the Chicago fucking Blackhawks, like the Detroit Red Wings. They're the Detroit fucking Red Wings, right? Not just any player makes the Detroit Red Wings. And as much as you may like Sean Lalonde and you may think he's going to be a great prospect, and I agree, I do, but you just don't pencil him in on a team that's defending a Stanley Cup championship. So, I mean, I just see that fifth and sixth spot, you know, whining. It sounds like Jordan Hendry's coming back. Whether Boynton comes back or not is kind of, if he does, that's fine. He can't give you what Sopel did, but, you know, if he's your seventh defenseman and you bring in somebody else to, you know, eat up some of those Sopel minutes, you need it because you know, the one thing that the Blackhawks got away with last year is they never had a major injury. And, you know, what was the reason why the Flyers lost, you know, or didn't at least push a Game 7 in the finals this year? It was because their defense could not keep up with the Blackhawks. And who's to say that that same thing won't happen to the Blackhawks this coming year if they can only play two sets of, you know, two sets of D. If the Blackhawks get to the finals and they can only play Keith Seabrook, Jamerson, and Campbell, what are the odds they win the Stanley Cup again? Not as good. That was the downfall of Flyers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good, and some would say it's the best top four in the NHL. You need a lot more than that to win Stanley Cups, though. And then that's a good question. Right now, where does that top four? Obviously, with questions on the depth, but that top four, would you consider them the top four in the league?
Yeah. For what the Blackhawks do, and the impact that those four have, absolutely. The Blackhawks push the pace, and that's why Campbell and Keith should never be on the ice at the same time, because they're the two fastest guys on the team, maybe two of the fastest defensemen in the league. They dictate the pace of a hockey game, and Seabrook and Jamerson are the safety nets on both of those units, and. At a little bit of smash mouth, and both very technically sound, do what they're supposed to do, do all the right things, and Keith does too. But we've talked about this before. It's no coincidence that the Blackhawks struggled as mightily as they did. They finally got it going at the very end of the regular season, but then again, in the series, the first few games with the Predators, they looked lost. And then Brian Campbell came back early from his injury, and all of a sudden, the Blackhawks look like the Blackhawks again. Campbell's as important of a player on this team as anybody. But yeah, I don't, off the top of my head, I'm sure there's a team that's close. Maybe they're top four. I think if you're going now top sixes. Now that's closer because the Blackhawks don't even have a 5-6 at this point. And it's looking like their 5-6 are minor leaguers. And that changes the game. But I want to mention something from yesterday's show. We have a listener who is a very big Victor Stahlberg fan. Of course, Victor Stahlberg coming over in the trade from the Toronto Maple Leafs for Chris Versteeg, and some garbage got swept back and forth. I'll say this. The book on Victor Stahlberg is he's very fast, skates very well, back and forth. But he doesn't hit anything, and he avoids contact in any means possible. He has a decent number line. If you look at his number line from Toronto, he has decent numbers. I believe I have him here somewhere. Superstar.
I think it was 9.5 assists in 40 games.
Exactly. And then in Toronto, the Marlies in Toronto, right down the expressway there. You could bike back and forth from the Air Canada Center and the Ricoh Coliseum. 39 games with the Marlies, 12 goals, 21 assists for 33 points. I'll say this about Victor Stahlberg, and I watch enough Toronto Maple Leaf hockey to really hurt the quality of anyone's life. Because they're always on Hockey Night in Canada. You have to watch Hockey Night in Canada. And anytime they're on Rogers or anytime Leafs TV is on, I mean, the production quality of those games versus anything that you see in America, it's so far superior that you just have to watch it. So I watch a ton of Toronto Maple Leaf hockey. I'm willing to give the kid a chance, but, like this listener said, he feels, and I guess he's biased because he's from Sweden as well, But he feels like it's his, in his prediction, that Victor Stahlberg's going to end up being a 25, 30, 35 goal scorer for the Blackhawks. The only thing I'll say is this, okay? I think if he gets 20, I think that's huge for the Hawks. But if Victor Stahlberg was going to be a 30, 35 goal a year player, why the hell would they trade him for Chris Versteeg?
Exactly. Unless the Leafs think that Chris Versteeg is going to be a 35 to 40 goal scorer.
I don't know. I don't believe that.
I mean, I don't either. I mean, but, you know,
35 goals is a lot of goals these days. You know, only an elite player. I mean, only the best of the best, Crosby and Ovechkin and Kovalchuk, get near 50 or exceed 50. 40 is like the old 50. So you're talking 30, 35 goals. That's a lot of goals. And I don't think the listener meant like this year. He probably means, you know, I think he would mean a year or two down the road, and but have a really strong year this year. And I think he did make the caveat that he could be a 30 or 35 goal guy if he played with Kane and Taves. I don't know. Maybe Superstar could be a 30 goal man if he played with Patrick Kane. I don't know.
I think I could.
I remember the 5 goal night in the men's league, Superstar.
I do. Good to do it again tonight too.
I never seen a guy do less on a night he scored 5 goals, but you somehow accomplished that.
I was doing my best Patrick Sharp imitation, you know. Weak side, wait for the pass and tap an empty net.
We got to talk about Bob Probert. Of course, on July 5th, Bob Probert goes out boating with his family, and very tragically starts having chest pains and has a heart attack and basically dies right there in front of his wife and children. Terrible thing, of course. I want to talk about this because way back, about a year and a half ago, the Blackhawks held a, whatever this means, but they held a heritage night for Bob Probert. And I remember when that was announced, because Blackhawks announced these heritage nights before the season even began, before all the tickets were sold. And again, this would have been decided and announced the summer before the first season that the Blackhawks made the playoffs. So the Blackhawks were starting to pick up steam, but they weren't anywhere close yet to where they are now, where you can't get a ticket in the building unless you go on Ticket Exchange or StubHub or whatever. Okay, so the Blackhawks were thinking of ways of how they could sell tickets, right?
So absolutely.
They came up with these nights, and they were typically on weeknights or against fringe opponents on a Sunday night. You know, and Sundays of late anyway, in recent years, haven't been the Blackhawks' best drawing night. You know, we're talking about the difference of, you know, a few hundred people here or there, but still, I mean, Sunday nights, statistically, average, you know, it hasn't been the Blackhawks' best night. So they schedule a night in February, mid to late February, where Bob Probert will be honored during a game or before a game against the Minnesota Wild. You know, who wants to see the Minnesota Wild play, you know? Mikko Koivu doesn't necessarily, resonate dollar signs around the NHL away arena.
No.
So the Blackhawks come up with this plan that they're going to make Bob Probert night. Bob Probert's a huge name in hockey. And why is he a huge name? He's a huge name because he's a bruiser and he's a brawler. And that makes, in the NHL and amongst hockey fans, that makes you an immediate hero. If you're a guy that loves to drop the gloves and you drop the gloves consistently, and you're Bob Probert, which, you know, for many, many years you were a badass mofo and you were pounding people down, well, of course you're going to be a huge star. You know, to boot, he played with Steve Yzerman on the Red Wings, and he had some very, you know, it's a very good offensive years with the Red Wings. His Blackhawks career is a totally different story. Now, basically what, I took a lot of heat, and I don't even know why. Here's the story. All right, Superstar, I didn't even talk to you about this. So here's the story. Bob Probert passes away, and then the next day, Sam Fell, Second City Hockey, the committed Indian, emails me and says, hey, I want to run the column that you did after that Bob Probert Heritage Night, and I want to post it on the website. You know, and he could do whatever he wants with it. It's his, I wrote it for his publication. He published it. It's his property. He could do whatever he wants with it. I don't care. But, that article that I wrote 5 days after, in response to that Heritage Night. You had this night where Bob Probert was brought in, put before all these Blackhawk fans, and, of course the Blackhawks aren't gonna, hold a Heritage Night and talk about what a deadbeat, drunk, and cokehead Bob Probert was. No one's gonna cheer that.
No.
Well, maybe a few people would. But not 20,000 people. So, they go and find it, and it's hard to gather a highlight package. I lived these years. I was in the United Center for all of these games. It's hard to go through the video library and find enough footage to put a Bob Probert highlight package of his Blackhawk career. It's difficult. But they did it. And they showed it, and it looked like, if you didn't know any better, and you're watching this Bob Probert highlight special, you'd say to yourself, man, that guy was a damn good Blackhawk. But all you really saw, you saw a couple of goals, you saw some fights, and that's about it. That's more eventful than anything but Bob Probert's first year as a Blackhawk. His first season as a Blackhawk, I'll give to you. 95-96, he was very good. 20 goals. He was happy to be, he was clean. He got clean, presumably. At least we never heard anything of him not being clean in his entire, stint as a player in Chicago. But after that first year, the next year he got hurt. And then he was never the same. And with each passing year, his skills diminished. The fire that you once saw, in every sense of his game, as a guy that would skate up the ice and throw his weight around, in the corner or on defenseman on the forecheck, his willingness to fight. And when he did drop the gloves, that sort of, that burly, I'm going to beat the hell out of you, reputation that he got in Detroit. It's an interesting thing. I mean, Bob Probert is a guy that would tell people, admitted, when, he watches some of those Detroit Red Wing highlights, that he didn't remember them. He was all jacked up on coke during games. Allegedly. But he admitted such. So, the Blackhawks present this night, and it's just a gimmick. It's just at the time it was a gimmick to ensure of a sellout. It's a big name, that you have all this footage of him in a Blackhawk uniform. He had one good year, and all of a sudden you're honoring him. You're calling him a great Blackhawk. That alone, in my mind, was offensive. But it's only offensive to me because I was in the, like I said, I was in that building. I know what the real story is. And again, aside from 1 year, he was horrible. He was a terrible Blackhawk. Sure, he fought. Sure, he fought a few times, and you know that's whatever. But he was a terrible Blackhawk. Don't try to tell me. The same people that are try to wax poetic about the Bob Probert, the Chicago Blackhawk, are the same people that watch Caddyshack 2 and then invest 2 hours in that and then try to tell you how great of a movie it was. Dopes.
Caddyshack 2 really sucked.
The thing on that night that angered me the most is that you got Bob Probert here, and the fact of the matter is the Blackhawks saved the man's life. Nobody wanted him. People wanted him, and then he crashed his motorcycle. The cops tested him. They found coke in his system. The Red Wings, who were in contract negotiations with him at the time because he was an unrestricted free agent. This was the season that ended up being the work stoppage, and it only ended up being half of a season. It was the first year of the United Center. Well, the Blackhawks ended up swooping in because the Rangers and the Red Wings, two of the teams that were most interested in Probert, pulled out after the motorcycle accident. And again, the history of the Blackhawks overspending for players that aren't worth it isn't just recent. It's not all Dale Talon's doing, or now Stan Bowman's doing. It was Bill Wirtz who gave Bob Probert a guy that he wasn't even sure was ever going to play hockey again. He'd ever be allowed onto an NHL rink again. He gave him $1.6 million a year, which in those days was like $4 million is now. Gave him $1.6 million a year, knew that he had violated, the substance abuse policy in the NHL, knew he was going to get suspended, and ended up paying Bob Probert's entire stay in drug rehabilitation. And then paid a guy, just like he did with Theo Fleury, paid a sponsor to hang out with Probert afterwards. How much more can you do for a guy? And then he plays out his contract. The Blackhawks re-sign him again for way more money than he deserved. And at the end of his career, they give him another contract that wasn't a lot of money. But, he didn't deserve a contract anyway. He couldn't play. He didn't want to fight. Every time that he fought, in the last 3 or 4 years of his career, every time Bob Probert fought, and Superstar, you correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm overdoing this. Every time he fought, he dropped the gloves, he would grab the guy and he would weather one or two punches, he would throw a couple of his own, and then he would immediately try to tackle the guy to the ice because he had checked out. Bob Probert mentally checked out of being the enforcer 3 years before his career ended.
Agreed.
So you got Bob Probert on this Heritage Night who's being ballyhooed for a career that didn't exist in Chicago. The Bob Probert that everybody wants to remember played in Detroit, didn't play here. 1 year, maybe. And all I asked as a fan, as a human being watching Bob Probert go through this night and go through this ridiculous hoopla of his Blackhawks career, which was a farce, just say, I would like to take, just take a moment to say, I would like to take, this opportunity to thank the Blackhawks for stepping up and the Wirtz family. You don't even have to say Bill Wirtz if you feel like that's going to get booed, which probably would have. The Wirtz family for stepping up and having such a profound impact on my life, and I'll never forget it, and I appreciate it, and, whatever. I love my time. Something like that. And he was here for 2 days, and he didn't say it once. Where was the appreciation? Where was the respect for an organization that gave he was a charity case in Chicago? I'm sure he was a great guy. I'm sure everybody that encountered him was great. And anybody that encountered him that he had bad feelings with, I'm sure isn't going to pop up a week after he died and say, you know what, I fucking hated that Bob Probert. because everybody's highly regarded when they're dearly departed. But that was the reason why I wrote the article that ended up in the Committed Indian that night. And you could go on Second City Hockey. You can go in the Committed Indian archive on my site. You could read it. I noted it in a post last week on this on thethirdmanin.com. My only thing was, Bob, you could have stepped up and you know, just be a man and just, you know, show some appreciation. And he didn't do it, and it set me off because it was ridiculous. So I wrote that a year and a half ago. I wrote that column. Sam reposted it, and all of a sudden I'm the fucking Antichrist.
Bad timing.
Well, I don't think it's bad timing at all. It wasn't like, you know, I read people were forwarding me messages and I was getting emails and stuff like that. People were saying like, oh, you know, it was. I think most people enjoyed it. Most people liked it. But I don't remember exactly what I wrote. But I remember the last line was something to the tune of, you know, those who, you know, can't admit their own history are doomed to repeat it. You know, and some people thought that, you know, that article was somehow prophetic. I mean, the man died of a heart attack. His father died younger than he did. You know, I'm sure the years of drug abuse didn't help his case any. You know, but he had a bad heart. You know, I don't think there's anything prophetic about it. I don't think the fact if Bob Probert, you know, and I got to tell you, and I'm sure a lot of people felt the same way when I was at the office a lot on July 5th. And when I left the office that day and I had gotten a message from someone who had said, you know, who had sent me the link to whatever the first post was that Bob Probert had passed away and all that, my first thought, of course, was, oh, my God, he relapsed. And of course, he didn't. But had he done so, I would have been like, gosh, you know, I wouldn't want anybody talking about that article because then everyone, you know, I don't, you never want to, you know, gloat about someone's death. You know, I predicted this, you know, but one had nothing to do with the other. He ended up dying because he had a bad heart condition that he probably inherited. So there's nothing prophetic about that column, and all I did was state facts about his life, you know. And, you know, it's like these Blackhawk fans, you know, they're a trip, you know. It's like Blackhawk fans, they'll boo at a man's eulogy. But if you state the facts about a player that they, you know, they feel should be beloved, you're an asshole. You know, these are the same Blackhawks fans that two playoffs ago mocked the image of Christ and then went e-commerce with them and with it and then patted themselves on the back for a job well done. These are Chicago Blackhawks fans. Some of them, anyway.
Yeah, not all of us.
No. All right, we got time to talk Kyle Beach here real quick before we head out. Kyle Beach, speaking of trips, you know, the Blackhawks, you were actually, you didn't go to prospect camp with me this year, but you were there with me last year, correct?
I was.
I remember that correctly. You can help me out with this one, but Kyle Beach last in the 2009 summer camp was a floater. I mean, he was a guy that wasn't really hitting too many guys. He was skating to spaces, and he just looked like a guy that was playing with a bunch of other guys that didn't know what he was trying to accomplish. And had he been on the ice with, you know, a playmaking center or something, he probably would have stood out a lot more than he did, but he wasn't physical enough. There wasn't enough, as opposed to his buddy Akeem Alou, who had a lot of, you know, assertion in his game, Kyle Beach had none. So Kyle Beach comes to 2010 summer camp, and Blackhawks probably sat him down, said, we want you to be more physical. That's, you know, an element of your game that we're going to need in Chicago. And since we're talking about the Kyle Beach that fought 5'9" Marc-Andre Bergeron in preseason twice a couple years ago, Kyle Beach goes out, and he did fight a guy that was his own size, but on Monday, he fought Matthias Olim, who is a scrawny European center prospect the Blackhawks signed for 1 year. The first time he fought him in a scrimmage, he basically beat him up, Olim. Beach beat up Olim. And then for some reason, Beach instigates a second fight in which he's cross-checking the guy's arm as they're trailing the play, challenging him to a fight. Now, this is prospect camp. This is Olim is a kid that knows he's got to stand up for himself. He's got to show toughness. You know, I mean, guys don't make the Blackhawks, or they don't make an invitation to the Rockford IceHogs but you certainly don't make the Blackhawks by anything that you do in prospect camp. It means nothing. It's just for the Blackhawks front office and hockey operations, it's basically just to get an idea of where these guys are at. You know, you can't really coach them. You can only talk to them about where you feel they're at, what they need to work on. And it just gives you a good idea and a chance to see these kids in person, you know, to evaluate where their progress is at. So Aleem's out there, and Beach is challenging his manhood, and he can't turn Beach down, so he drops the gloves again, and he fights Beach. And, you know, the problem that I had with it is that not only does Beach typically not want to fight guys his own size, but he beat the kid up, and then he wouldn't stop. You know, he kept throwing punches when the two, Al Stensland was one of them, AHL linesman, when the two referees came in and were separating him, and he was still throwing punches from the top. And it's like, it's that kind of stuff that, you know, I remember growing up, and I Blackhawks fans typically didn't like that kind of stuff. That's Dino Cicerelli behavior. And everybody hated Dino Cicerelli. You know, I know that the modern day comparison is Sean Avery. But if Kyle Beach comes and does, you know, and puts up any semblance or any, you know, resemblance of the numbers that he put up in the WHL, I mean, we're talking about, you know, he's Dino Cicerelli. He's a puke on ice that he's a coward. And he's going to cause as many problems as perhaps he's, thinks he's doing well.
How big is Beach?
He's 6'3". Probably these days he's probably 215. But, yeah, he was making a statement in camp by fighting guys that were half of his size and continuing to pound on them after the fight was over and the other referee was restraining the guy. Class act.
Well, he's a big winner.
He's a real tough guy. And that's the kind of toughness the Blackhawks are going to need when they're defending their Stanley Cup championship. All right, Superstar, we might as well get going here.
Now's about the time.
It was good to have you back, I got to say, Superstar.
It was good to be back. Look forward to being back a lot more.
I hope so. All right, back-to-back shows here, back-to-back days. I'm pretty exhausted now.
You must be.
I'm gonna need another month off.
We'll see you for the start of camp. Good night, Chicago.
I don't think so. I don't have time to talk about why we were on the... It was for many different reasons. I wasn't incarcerated. I wasn't in rehab, although maybe I belong there.
maybe both.
talking about days that we doing shows on days that big news happens. We're like the blasting cap for Chicago Blackhawks news. Dieter and I planned on doing a show the day that Dustin Byfuglien was traded. In fact, I couldn't get out of what I was doing. We think we scheduled the show for like 4 o'clock or something. And I couldn't get out of what I was doing early enough to make the show, so I had to cancel it. And then I remember I was in the car on the way home, and I was, it was like 4:30, 5 o'clock or something, when someone texted me, I don't want to say who, but, that Dustin Byfuglien just got traded. And I'm like, wow, we could have been on the air talking about that. Opportunity lost.
You are the TMZ of Chicago Blackhawks hockey.
I gotta share a story about so I'm at prospect camp, right? And I keep, Superstar, I keep to myself.
You do.
I really don't like people, and I try to avoid contact with people at all times. But I'm standing there at prospect camp, and I don't know how likable of a figure I am around there. But Al McIsaac gave me the "I wish you would just die already" look.
That's awesome.
The teacher's pet in the Blackhawks front office apparently doesn't like me. I don't know. At least that's the impression I got. That's what I got out of that stern look he gave me. But that's fine.
Too bad.
Yeah, that's fine. Can't be everybody's friend. All right, Superstar, we're going to get out of here. I will see you in a little while.
What, about an hour and a half?
Yeah, I'm going to go take my pregame nap, and I'll see you then. Everybody, probably next week sometime, or maybe in 2 weeks. Depends on what goes on. I got a feeling the Blackhawks are going to make a good amount of news here in the next week or so, so we'll probably be back on within 7 days. But that's to be determined. For the Superstar, on this one-year anniversary of the Third Man in Radio, we are signing off. Good night, everybody.